Okay. So, Miss Cartwright, how did you get into teaching English?
Well, I was in my second year of university, and I didn't know what I wanted to do. I took a whole bunch of courses like archaeology, sociology, psychology, and I took an English course, mm-hmm. and I always loved reading and writing. Mm-hmm. I loved to write poetry. And the English teacher asked us to produce a short story. So I wrote this short story, and I gave it to her, and she said, "You really should major in English." And I thought, well, that's the first time anyone had said I should do anything.
Mm-hmm.
So I did it. I was like, okay, I'm going to major in English. So I finished my English degree, and I decided, well, what can I do with an English degree? That's what all English graduates say. And I thought, well, I'll teach. Mm-hmm. And then I decided that I would go into teaching. I just fell into the profession. I'd love mm-hmm. to tell you that I had a love for teaching, yeah. but that's not true. I just fell into the profession. I was like, okay, well, why don't I try to teach? And I went to teacher's college, and I love teaching.
Mm-hmm.
And then, so that's why I decided to teach.
So what kind of student were you in school?
Well, I would say that I was a better student out of school than I was in school. I was disengaged.
Mm-hmm.
I felt that it was quite an oppressive environment. My teachers, it was different in those days. You went into the classroom, you sat in rows, and they told you what to think and how to
mm-hmm.
think it. And I remember my English teacher at the time calling me a baboon because I didn't know how to use the semicolon. And it kind of turned me off school. And what I did is I was just really engaged with the world outside
mm-hmm.
of the classroom. And so my father was a very amazing human being. And we would spend hours, our family would spend hours in discourse, talking.
Mm-hmm.
And I got my love of learning from my father and not from school. And I thought to myself, I got to find a way to make school better for kids
mm-hmm.
because I never learned anything in school. I mean, I really had big issues with my teachers.
Mm-hmm.
I was the quiet girl, the back of the room, that never said anything. I just took it. I just sat there and
yeah.
did what was expected. And
just wasn't free.
And I never talked in class, ever. I just sat there. I was like flat, emotionless.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So that was kind of your view back then. Like, what is your view on the education system now?
My view on the education system now is that it's amazing at Langley Fine Arts.
Mm-hmm.
I finally found a school that matched my philosophy. I worked in a comprehensive high school, Brookswood Secondary,
mm-hmm.
for several years, for 13 to be exact. And you know, I really tried to engage kids, and I ran the student council, and
mm-hmm.
and you know, I tried to make my lessons really engaging, and
mm-hmm.
and you know, I tried to be a good teacher, but I didn't think the system really allowed me to be the teacher that I am today, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And I think coming to the school and having kids that are invested in the arts has
mm-hmm.
really helped me a lot, because I'm invested in the arts. I love the arts.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it makes teaching a lot easier when I can say, for example, in my grade 9 English class, okay, we're not having a final exam on the short story. Instead, what you're going to do is read a story and retell the story
mm-hmm.
in your using your art. And that helps me to engage
mm-hmm.
in teaching. But the thing is, I never give up.
Mm-hmm.
I never think that I'm a good teacher.
Mm-hmm.
I always, you know, try something new. So, you know, I got an iPad, and that's kind of given me a little bit of a hit, you know. And
yeah.
it's changing the way that I think and the way that I'm teaching. And, you know, I always walk away from the class going, did I do a good job of that? Did I engage the learners?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there's an awful lot of days where I go, geez, I could have done a better job.
Mm-hmm.
Or I certainly could be a better teacher. And I could have been a better person today. you know, because when you have 30 kids and you ignore a kid. Because I remember I was the little girl in the back of the classroom.
Yeah.
And I remember that I was, no one ever bothered to walk over to me and say, hey, you know, like, would you like to read your story? Or, you know, I always try to engage kids. So, yeah, mm-hmm. that's kind of the long and short of that.
Yeah. So, what are you kind of proudest of right now, like, in your life, like, so far? Like, what is, like, your most proudest moment, do you think?
I don't know about being proud, but I know about things that give me joy.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say right now, the thing that I feel the most joy about is my grandchildren.
Mm-hmm.
And teaching my grandchildren and being with my grandchildren. And it's when with them that I mean, I love my family dearly. I love mm-hmm. my husband dearly. He's awesome, you know. And but it's when I'm with my grandkids that I actually probably feel the closest to pure joy mm-hmm. that I have in my life for many, many years. They just make me so happy,
mm-hmm.
right? There's an innocence and a purity about them, and they give love so freely,
mm-hmm.
right? And I love them freely, and they love me freely. So I don't know about being proud, because I don't really know if I have pride about anything. Mm-hmm. I feel a sense of accomplishment. I'm very
yeah.
happy with the place I am now and the person I am now.
Mm-hmm.
I'm still learning. I'm really, really big into food and
mm-hmm.
Food security, and I read a lot of nonfiction on that in that area.
Yeah.
And I'm into gardening. I garden. I teach my grandchildren to garden. They're always with me in the garden.
Mm-hmm.
My grandson, who's 3, gardens with me sometimes the whole day, and we look at creatures and. You know, like the moments I'm with him in my garden, then, you know, it's a sense of completeness I get.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, like he'll say, he said something the other day, he goes, he didn't say there's a bee, he said there's a pollinator. And
oh.
I was like, yeah, that's true, that is a pollinator. And yeah, and, you know, I have this idea that if I build a habitat, then the world... nature will come to me,
mm-hmm.
and it does. And whenever it does come to me, the green frog that my grandson picks up, the snail that he collects in buckets, all of those things
mm-hmm.
make me feel really proud, I guess.
Yeah.
But I don't have that feeling of proud. I don't know what proud
yeah.
is. I just feel complete as a person, and I read a lot, and
mm-hmm.
I love the internet. The internet is bringing knowledge to me.
Mm-hmm.
I love to chase the news. I love to read about things. So, you know, like, I just don't ever find that I have enough time in the day
mm-hmm.
to do everything I want. And I was happy this summer because I had a fear of sailing, but I've sailed for
yeah.
years, right? And I thought to myself, why do I have a fear of sailing, talking about accomplishments?
Yeah.
And I realized it was because my husband always was in control of the boat.
Mm-hmm.
So I said to Dan, you just sit here and you just tell me if I'm doing it right. And
mm-hmm.
then I took control of the boat. And then I learned how to do that. And I managed to overcome my fear.
Mm-hmm.
Because what you don't know is what you fear.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So I just dug in there and... You know, I was sailing it, and I have a picture that I have on my iPod
mm-hmm.
that is me commanding the boat.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's really cool, that kind of thing. So, yeah, getting back to the proud thing, I don't feel that emotion.
Mm-hmm.
I feel accomplishment, but I don't really feel like, oh, I was really good at that, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because I never really think I am. I always feel, oh, what can I improve upon now in my life? And
yeah. Like, I knew...
That's just the photocopier, anyway.
Should be cut.
The printer.
We'll just keep going.
Just cut, maybe?
Yeah. Because, yeah, we'll
yeah.
just cut it. Okay, so you're talking about how you were, like, you felt, like, good as a person. And I know, like, you're saying, like, your dad's really influential. In what way was he kind of influential? Like, how did he, like, affect the way you are now? Do you know? Is there...
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
My dad was really influential because he never... He never had any formal education. He came from a really kind of interesting family. His father, although was very bright, he was very racist. He was a member of the Ku Klux Klan. and my father came from that upbringing, yet he was a very liberated and humanist.
Mm-hmm.
And was able to rise above his upbringing.
Mm-hmm.
And my father was an environmentalist before environmentalism was popular.
Mm-hmm.
He was an engineer. He would travel all over the world, and he was very brilliant in his field. He would prevent blowouts in oil rigs.
Mm-hmm.
And he was also like an engineer for the oil rigs. And my father was acutely interested in life. He lived his life to the fullest. It was a short life, but mm-hmm. He was interested in bugs. He was interested in, I know it was bizarre, he was always taking pictures of bugs, right?
Yeah.
And he was interested in all sorts of politics and and history, and he learned it all from the Encyclopedia Britannica. We had an Encyclopedia Britannica, and he read it. And then he would sit down with us, and we would talk about what he had read in the Encyclopedia Britannica.
Oh.
And we would do that, like, nightly as a family. And his one hope and desire was that someone in his family would go to university.
Mm-hmm.
And I was that person.
Yeah.
And I finished my degree. And perhaps it was the proudest moment of his life when I finished my degree.
Mm-hmm.
Because he never had that ability, but he didn't let that limitation stop him.
Mm-hmm.
And people knew him. Wherever I'd go with my father, people would stop us. And I think he was an extremely compassionate man. And he was, he cared about people, cared about things and the environment and how people were living their lives. And people knew that. And he traveled, like, up north. And he worked with the Inuit.
Mm-hmm.
And he was drilling rigs up north. And he would come back, and he would tell us stories about what happened. And I found out that my brother was telling me that he was one of the first guys that was involved in the tar sands. And they were extracting the oil from, like, a washing machine. That's how they figured out, like, that there was oil in it. They were doing some kind of thing like that. But, like, the guy was really smart, but he wasn't formally educated. And he really cared about people.
Mm-hmm.
My mother's really beautiful, too. So it's sort of really hard to say, you know, who had the greatest influence in my life. But, you know, if I didn't have the parents that I had, then I would have, I don't think I'd be the person I am today.
Yeah.
And I still look after my 81-year-old mother, right? I have dinner with her every Friday night.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
So you're saying, like, you traveled all over the world, and I know you went, was it Iran you went
yes.
to? Yes. Yes. How young were you when you went there?
My father started working for the country of Iran in 1976, and I was 17 at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And so he packed the family up, and we went off to Iran. And we lived in a place called Ahvaz, Iran, and it was during the reign of the Shah, and then the Shah was overthrown in 1979.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when my father kind of knew it was going to happen, like, you know, when there's going to be a revolution.
Mm-hmm.
Right, you know, when the country, well, because we just knew that it was happening. Maybe it was the tanks going through the streets.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know. But
yeah.
We knew something was up. And also we had some Iranian friends that were telling us what was happening. So we left just before the actual overthrow. My father, and he set us up in Malta. He set our family up in Malta. He was smart because we sold all of the stuff that we had in Iran.
Mm-hmm.
And we actually packed up everything into a cargo container. And then so we'd actually escaped or left without really any problem. My father, when he left, there were people, he left in a helicopter, and there were people shooting at him as he was flying away. And yes, and it was like right at that moment he kept going into the country, and we were in Iran in Malta, and people that he was working with, we were getting their families would come to Malta, and we would, and then they would just go on home, and we were kind of, you know, we would just kind of look after them and make sure that everything was okay with them before they continued on to Canada.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so I was 21 when that happened. I was in university. I was already in my third year of university.
So were you going to university in Iran?
No. University of Calgary.
Oh.
At the time.
Okay.
Yeah.
When you were there, like, I know you said, like, your dad obviously experienced some violence. Did you ever, like, have any really kind of, like, frightening, dangerous experiences when you were there during that time?
Yeah, or? I did. Because, it was, of course, it's an Islamic country,
mm-hmm.
right? And a Muslim country. And basically, I had a boyfriend who was Armenian, and he was a minority
mm-hmm.
in the country. And he had a motorcycle, as I did. And he was driving around with me. And he stopped at the house, and I kissed him. And that caused a mob outside of our house because that was immoral. And our next door neighbor, we ran into the gates of my house. Mm-hmm. And our next door neighbor came out and calmed the crowd. And basically, you know, there were I had many mm-hmm. incidences of that, like that, where I was kind of in danger.
Mm-hmm.
And another time was I would be like riding my motorcycle, which, you know, when I think back on it, was pretty funky for me to be riding a motorcycle without a hijab on, or, you know, some kind of covering. I just used jeans and long mm-hmm. sleeve shirt. I didn't even use a handkerchief on my long blonde headed head, right? Long haired head. And what happened was they would throw rocks at me. It was common. Like, I would just, violence towards me was so common, I didn't even notice it eventually. Because it would just happen all the time. And you know what? You just live it, and mm-hmm. it just becomes part of your experience. But I had really amazing experiences there too,
mm-hmm.
where I traveled with my father, took me to Karg Island, which was this island that only very high clearance security people could mm-hmm. Go. And I saw some really interesting things. I swam in the Persian Gulf and all of that stuff at that time.
Mm-hmm.
It was beautiful, right?
Yeah.
Beautiful blue water, and but there was always that looming security
mm-hmm.
all around, kind of a bit like 1984, you know.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Military.
So when yeah. you came back, did you like have any like kind of like weird like customs or things like that were in that were part of like the society in Iran that you kind of brought back with you? That kind of stuck?
No, because I was a university student at the time. So,
mm-hmm.
no, not at all. What I brought back with me mm-hmm. was a love of travel.
Mm-hmm.
And at the time, I was so fortunate because twice a year, it was part of my dad's contract. Like, the Iranian mm-hmm. government paid for my university for 3 years. A complete 100% scholarship. The Shah of Iran, I have to thank him for that.
Yeah.
Right? And basically, what happened, it's kind of a funny story, but I love to travel, and the Shah would pay for me to go to Iran twice a year.
Hmm.
I would get an airplane ticket in the mail, and then I would just go off to see my parents. And I got really smart. I would have these layovers, and then I would go to the desk, and I would say, oh, you know, like, I'm 19 years old, and here I am traveling by myself, and
mm-hmm.
and I'm in a layover, and they would give me like hotel rooms at the Hilton. I don't know how I conned people into it, but I did. And I remember staying at the Hilton and traveling in Amsterdam by myself. I traveled by myself, and my parents were totally fine with that,
mm-hmm.
which kind of, when I look back on it, they just didn't have a problem with
yeah.
security. They just, it's Europe, and it's as safe as traveling around in Vancouver,
mm-hmm.
you know, like that was their attitude, because they're, you know, it's a developed world country, so they were fine. So I traveled a lot by mm-hmm. myself.
Is that kind of how you got into the whole sailing thing, or is that?
No, that was through my husband. He was a sailor.
Husband.
Yeah.
So speaking of sailing,
yeah,
there was something I was kind of interested in was, you once talked about the boat capsizing, and I was wondering, like, why were you out there? Where were you?
Well, happened? The boat didn't capsize. It almost capsized. Oh. And we almost ran aground. And up by, on Hornby, there's an island, the Squeedy Island, and they have these things, they're freakish winds that come in, right? Mm. And it was a beautiful sunny day, and then all of a sudden the winds blew in, and they were like really, really super, super strong, and we took the sail down, and we were moving at like 7 knots, which is unreal. Like the boat was just moving down the mm-hmm. water, right? And we didn't really have, we only had our motor as control. And the motor, we didn't know where we were going, so we ended mm-hmm. up in a bay. And it was one of those life-affirming moments. It was Little Tribune Bay, which is a nude beach. And it was one of those moments, you know, and there's all these nude people, and there we were, fully clothed. And we just put down the anchor, and we just sat there until the winds blew down, and away we went. And, that's what happens when you sail.
I guess
you're dealing with Mother Nature. It can be beautiful one moment from and not so nice. Too, yeah, so. I mean, you try to do the best you can, mm-hmm. and you follow the weather patterns, and you listen to your radio. But sometimes Mother Nature just takes control.
Mm-hmm. Can you tell me if maybe an adventure or something you had maybe while traveling that changed your life, or, like really influenced your life?
Uh-huh. I remember, it's funny that you should say that, because I remember I was in the desert in Iran, and I was traveling with my parents. We were going inland to a place called Shiraz, where there's Persepolis. It's this ancient ruins. Mm-hmm. And, you know, just how lucky was I, right?
Yeah.
And there were no roads into Shiraz, or the roads were very mm-hmm. poor. And we had this little car, there's no gas stations. You brought your own gas, and you mm-hmm. had to have your tires and stuff. And we blew out a tire, and I remember my dad going, "Oh, we blew out a tire!" And so we all got out, and we were changing it, and these guys came in camels over the the top of the hill, and they're like looking down at us, and you know they're tribesmen, they're Qashqai, and they're looking down at us, and I was like it's a bit threatening. But you know, like, we did, it was weird, because whenever you were with my father, he had such a sense of adventure. You never felt threatened, mm-hmm. and I didn't feel threatened then. And they helped us fix our car, and off we went. And I remember, like, looking at them and looking back and looking at the tribal tents and thinking to myself, wow, I just really come from a different country. The mm-hmm. world is just, you know, full of, you know, do I have a better life than these people? They are all happy. And mm-hmm. and I just really questioned, you know, what the Western society gives to people. Mm-hmm. And they were... You know, and they were so friendly, and I had this expectation that, you know, here's these marauders on camels, and you know what I mean? And my dad, just like, they're just like anyone else, and he had been into a lot of the Qashqai's tents, because that's what he did. Mm-hmm. He went in and he would talk to people about drilling for oil, mm-hmm. right? And another time I met this, I was just hanging, because I was very much like my dad. I would just end up in these really strange places with people, and mm-hmm. and I was with a bunch of friends, and we decided to go to an Arab village, and I went to the Arab village, and mm-hmm. there's this really old grizzled man. He had big white beard, and he's really old, and mm-hmm. he looked like he was about 100 years old, and his house was made out of bricks, and mm-hmm. it was and you know, you could tell he was like, I'm sorry, mud bricks, right? It was a mud house, right? Just like in the National Geographic. And, you know, you just can't speak the language. It wasn't Arabic. And I was just kind of sitting there, and I smoked Marlboro cigarettes at the time. And I whipped up my Marlboro cigarette and my red Bic lighter, and I went, and I lit up the lighter, and he has, like, his eyes got so big. And he's just like... And this grizzled hand reached across to me, and he was like, and his beard was like quite, you know, halfway down, and just like, he wanted it. And I said, here. Mm-hmm. Have, you know, because disposable me, have my lighter. I don't care. Like, have my lighter. My gift to you. Have it. And he was like, oh, and he's holding it, he's flicking it. He can't figure out how to get the flame to come out, but he knew the flame could come out. And then he went, and he let the flame out, and it let its beer on fire. And I was like, whoa, man. This is just... unreal.
That just doesn't happen in real
life. And everyone
life.
Just like looked at him, and it was like, and we all looked at, I mean, of course we put it out. It wasn't really that, like,
yeah, it was just,
but it started to burn, right? And, you know, it kind of informed the person I am today, that the world isn't just all about this Western society, that there's other cultures, there's other peoples, there's other, like, I think that the value of traditional cultures.
Mm-hmm. So kind of along those lines, how would you like to be remembered?
Oh my God. that's a tough question. And it's really big, right? And I think, in a way, you know, I spent a lot of my life traveling, and I've seen a lot of different things and experienced a lot of things. But I think my greatest joy ends up being in my kitchen, in my garden. You know, like, I've sort of come full circle because of my age. Like, not that I'm super old or anything, but, you know, I'm 50 plus.
Yeah.
And I think the love that I feel for my family and the love that I feel for my grandchildren, and I'm hoping that the love I have for the environment, and I hope that people remember me as someone who cared about things and bothered to learn about them. So, you know, whatever that field may be. But, you know, really, I feel I'm coming full circle back home. You know, I started out here, and I went all over the world, and now I feel I'm coming back home. Not that, you know, put me out to pasture or anything, because I've already decided what I'm going to do next after I retire. But, you know, I'm going to continue living every moment that I have.
Yeah.
But that sort of, just that I cared, and that I taught people to care, or maybe inspired people to care, because I don't think you teach people to care. I think you can inspire them. You can say, well, you know, maybe we should look at this, and
that's a very good answer. All right, thank you very much, Ms. Conrad.
Thank you.
Whoa, that was a lot, eh?
Yeah.
Is it off?
Well,
we can cut it if it's not, so just take it.